Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The
Score! This hour is brought to you by Cars for Kids. Call 1-877-CARS with the K, the number 4, KIDS.
Mully and Hall.
Fantastic, fantastic show.
Chicago Sports Talk for your morning.
Oh, man, I really wanted to talk to him.
Appreciate the love, big homie.
We know that there was the big trade. Sam Darnold goes to Carolina, a sixth-round pick this year, and second and fourth-round picks in 2022. Also, the Atlanta Falcons are open to trading the number 4 pick. They've discussed deals with other teams, per one report. So we know that you're going to get a quarterback to Jacksonville. We know the Jets are going to draft a quarterback because they traded Sam Darnold. We know that San Francisco has moved in at number 3 and they're taking a quarterback at number 3. Do you want a quarterback at number 4? Maybe a local team wants to trade up and get that number 4 pick. Don't do it. It's not often you get more than a couple players out of a draft. I get it. Teams are going to draft quarterbacks, and there's thought to be 5 of them that are worthy. But you want to trade up for number 4, David? We're number 4?
You don't want to give up that kind of draft capital to move up. Yeah. And I think that ownership should discourage any instinct that Ryan Pace may have. And we're not saying he does, but if he were to go in that direction, stop him immediately. You don't want to do that. Mully, the more I see this and the more you start to do the math and you think, okay, could 5 quarterbacks go in the top 10 picks? It's not implausible to suggest that given the run on quarterbacks. And if that happens, I'm starting to wonder, if you're Ryan Pace and you're looking at what you need, and maybe a quarterback in the second round makes sense, maybe a cornerback makes sense. You're thinking wide receiver if you're Matt Nagy because you love your toys. Right tackle still there. I'd be more likely to entertain this scenario and conversation, move back. If you can get 3 picks among your top 60 in the draft, you get 3 guys who can contribute immediately, or 2 guys and a developmental player rather than just 2 players if you're able to find somebody who wants to move up and draft 20. Who knows? It's possible.
Mike Mulligan and David Hall taking you up to 9 o'clock on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Oh, yes, indeed, David. In the middle of the night, the White Sox started their winning streak. They've now won a couple of games in a row, and it's always fun to see the local teams win. And my goodness gracious, they have now beaten left-handed pitching 17 consecutive games. One off of the number. The number.
Wow.
18.
Good morning, Mully. Happy Wednesday. Yeah, the White Sox, they take care of the Mariners, and it was a busy night in Chicago sports. My goodness sakes. 4 games to choose from, 4 games to digest and talk about today. The Sox get back to .500, the Cubs get 1 hit, and the Bulls and the Blackhawks take home victories.
Yeah, it is. It was really good to see the winter sports teams win. The Bulls have a winning streak of their own, and they've got to keep that up. if they plan on getting into the playoffs. We know the trade deadline right around the corner for the Blackhawks, so there are considerations for them as they try to put some games together and stay in the playoff race. And we haven't mentioned the Cubs because they didn't win, and that was disappointing. What did you think of Edbert Elzelay, as the fifth starter, ends up losing that game? They fall to the Brewers, but he had effectively one bad inning. I think that's what we expect from young guys as they're kind of working themselves into the season. It wasn't a shocker that he got touched early. And unfortunately, they couldn't get the offense generated at all. They are
bad time to get touched, though, with the first inning.
Well,
because
no
there
question.
Was so much buildup and so much anticipation. This is the guy that won the job in spring training. He beat out Alec Mills, and we'll talk more about that situation later. But I think there was a lot of hope invested in him going to the mound. And okay, here is the Cubs' young pitching prospect, and they're. You're at Wrigley Field, you're playing the Brewers, and then all of a sudden, it's 3-0 before they even have an at-bat, and it's the top of the first. And, yeah, I know, he settled down, and he was fine after that. It was just after that, it's like he exhaled, but it's you're not going to overreact to one start. And just like everything else, this is a very long season. But I was a little disappointed, glad to see him settle down, but – you know, giving up 3 runs in the first inning is less than ideal, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, no question about it, but feel free to score a couple on your own. I mean, it's a long game. Even if you fall behind early, there's nothing, no rule that says the offense isn't supposed to contribute. And, you know, I get it. Both benches emptied late in the game because you had a plunking. I don't know if was it purposeful. Wilson Contreras. We'll get into that as well. I would think though, David, that if you're going to hit a Cub, it always was Anthony Rizzo. I don't know that it shouldn't be Wilson Contreras because he doesn't seem to like it very much, and he seems to react pretty angrily to that sort of thing. Well, and I don't know that they were headhunting, but you get hit twice in a series, you start feeling like they're coming for you.
Especially the way that you got hit the night before.
Right.
Now, that was scarier than what happened last night.
When
on Monday night he gets hit in the helmet and you're wondering how bad is that going to be, it looked awful. And I was watching and you let out an audible, oh, my gosh, that looked like you're fortunate it wasn't worse than that. But, I don't think they were thrown at him. It was a 4-0 game and there was no reason for it. But at the same time, You're tightly wound like Wilson Contreras is.
Right.
You're an intense player that is a strength of yours. And you've been hit in the last 11 games against the Brewers six times. So I get why he would maybe feel a little bit picked on or targeted. But even though it doesn't seem like they were doing that and it didn't sound like the rhetoric afterward, like this may go anywhere. So hopefully the Brewers can control their pitchers a little bit better and stop hitting Willie.
But, David, I mean, you're going to lead off the ninth by hitting a guy? That doesn't make sense at all. They're trying to protect the lead. I don't know. I mean, I know you're not, as a player, you're not thinking of it that way. You're thinking of what you said, that this is happening far too often. But I hate this idea of retaliating. I just think that the unwritten rule book is unwritten for a reason, and I would hope that isn't the case, but who knows? I mean, baseball is a different kind of game. The thing is, you got the professor on the bump today. Win the game. Just
win the game.
That's a great
Get
way
on track.
To win the game, win the series, right? I mean, that's the way you got to approach everything.
Get your number one starter to match what your 2, 3, and 4 guys did in their turn in the rotation. Get Kyle Hendricks on track. Take care of business, win the series, and get some hitters going. Because, you know, Chris Bryant had the only hit. He's looked okay at the plate. But, you know, when you look at Jock Peterson and you look at, you know, Contreras isn't exactly doing anything at the plate. Bodie, Rizzo, these guys have to get going.
Yeah.
They are collectively letting people down offensively. So, yeah, today would be a good day to get started.
Yeah, I think they went in with the 28th batting average in baseball and scored no runs. So that doesn't indicate that they played great offense. I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. Dustin thinks that Willie was trying to get everybody fired up, and that's why he got fired up. It didn't seem like that. It seemed like he was genuinely angry about getting plunked, and he wasn't thinking about the time. I think he was thinking about, hey, the times, why is this happening to me type thing.
It looked like a very instinctive response. I mean, if you are on your way somewhere and somebody bumps into you inadvertently and it's just a reaction, right? It's like, oh, I didn't like that. You know, that's the way he is. He's just an intense guy. I don't know that he felt like he was declaring that it was intentional, that he was consciously trying to fire somebody up. At that point in the game, it was 4-0. So I just feel like that's who he is. And you like that about him because he's intense. But I'm not sure it was anything more than that. We'll see if it goes anywhere.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens, I suppose. Again, win the game, win the series. That's all you're supposed to do. The White Sox got a grand slam. Second grand slam of the season for Jose Abreu. That's pretty extraordinary when you think about it. I mean, you know, you walk into one, okay, but you hit two of them. That's intentional, in my opinion, David. I think he's the kind of guy that could hit a grand slam. That's my conclusion.
That's clutch, and it was number 200 career wise. And Tony La Russa called it Hollywood ish. So he's getting caught up in the hysteria out there. Nice moment for Jose Abreu. Great way to finish the night for the White Sox. Looked a little bit shaky there at times. Lucas Giolito didn't have his best stuff, but persevered, and that's nice to see. But nice
to
see.
Struck out 10. I mean, I hear what you're saying. He got touched in one inning, but you know, here's the problem. Play some defense, White Sox.
This is the
season long problem.
I'm not picking on Lucas. Okay, I went
after him.
I'm watching him, and I'm seeing a little bit of relative struggle, and I'm listening to Steve Stone tell me the same thing. So I'm putting two and two together. Yeah. Lucas was great because he won the game. He struck out 10, even on his best – even on an off night, when you strike out 10, that tells you that you are an ace, okay? So I'm not picking out Lucas. Back off.
I was watching the game with my son, and we got into a conversation about Fernando Tatis Jr. and that swing and everything. And the next thing you know, we're kind of huddled over the iPad watching that again and again and again. And it's just extraordinary that he injured himself swinging. But when you watch it, of course he injured himself swinging. I think I'm surprised seeing that injury. And again, so far he's headed to the IR, but he is not, it's not going to be surgery yet, thank God. But goodness gracious, that was like the most violent. We talked about it yesterday, but having watched it now in super slow-mo about 20 times, that's one of the most bizarre injuries I think you're going to see. Just the violence of that swing, the way he went around. It's almost like watching a guy injure himself with a golf swing. You know what I mean? Like, it was unbelievable the way that his body turned and the shoulder went and all the rest of it. Crazy.
A lot of torque. A lot of... unnatural movement, and it's unfortunate to see, because you don't want one of baseball's brightest stars to be out for an extended period of time the way it looks. But let me ask you this, though, Molly. I mean, do you think that swing, when you watch it and many times as you've watched it, haven't you seen that type of a swing before from guys like Javi Baez, who swing for the fences so often? And it's amazing it doesn't happen more often, given how severe this injury appears, because I was surprised to learn that, you know, he's talking about potential. They had to rule out surgery, all these other things that could be an extended period of time. The word season ending was used yesterday as a possibility. We've seen Javi Baez do this hundreds of times at Wrigley.
Javi has this like corkscrew effect where you think he's going to like actually turn into the ground. This was like, I mean, you can almost see the shoulder pop, right? I mean, he went so far around, and it was, I think you're right. I just, I didn't know you could turn your body that way. And then, I mean, maybe if you're Houdini, you could pop that thing back in and off you go. But goodness gracious, that was awful.
Maybe he's got a little of that in him. But here's the other thing I thought about, and I hesitate to bring this up because I know I don't want to – look, when you see how sensitive some guys are to swings like that, and it's a power swing or whatever, and then you consider, you know, Eloy Jimenez coming back from an injury – and you wonder how if does everything have to be just so? And you see the extension, and you wonder, oh my gosh, you know he's got a torn pec. How is he ever going to swing this year? You know, in August or September or whenever. It just it's you don't like to see it. You hope it's a freakish thing, and you hope that he recovers soon.
The Bulls looked pretty good, I thought. Vooch, 32 points, 17 rebounds, 5 assists. They once again have beaten a depleted team. If we could just agree that whatever team they play next, each game loses their top player or has a couple guys sit out, I think that might be a great kind of avenue to the playoffs, David.
I thought that we agreed that we weren't going to mention that we were just going to say the Bulls have victories on consecutive nights against playoff teams, and we're going to use that as a label and just kind of forget about the fact that, you know, the Pacers and the Nets have been compromised and didn't have their full unit, because the Bulls at this point of the season, after not winning for a week after getting Vooch, two in a row, they'll take it. They'll take it. However you want to slice it, describe it, look at it, they will take two in a row.
And it was good to hear Denzel Valentine. He talked about his brother, Drew Valentine. Drew Valentine introduced yesterday as the Loyola head coach. And at one point he was asked if he got Sister Jean's blessing. And he revealed that she has entered the transfer portal. I was stunned by that. The poor woman's 101, but with that, no, that's not true. He said, I think I do. And then Steve Watson, the AD, said that he talked to Sister Jean and she approved.
I hope they did. Yeah. I mean, that would have been a really big faux pas. You know that's going to come up at the press conference. And thank goodness that Sister Jean didn't have to, you know, head to Lincoln Park and DePaul and root for a new team. And she approved this hire. I thought that was really cool moment, though.
You're saying that Tony Stubblefield would have, if she was in the transfer portal, he would have jumped in. He's such a good recruiter. Because I thought maybe she'd go to Oklahoma, too. I don't know how far away Norman is.
That's a little far. We want to relocate that degree. It was a cool moment with Drew Valentine at the press conference. The emotion, the realization and recognition of what he's accomplished at such a young age. And to think that he and his brother are doing this in the same city, and they're both at, you know, Denzel and Drew having, you know, come here and doing what they're doing is pretty cool.
I believe that Denzel has a video out, right? Does he not? Didn't he make a hip-hop song? And I think Drew is in the video. So we'll have to do a little research and find out, because we're talking to Drew later in the program. But if we can grind on something like that?
I don't know. Could that be a potential NCAA violation? Are you allowed to have coaches in these kind of videos?
I think it was just his brother at that point. Okay. I mean, you've got to be able to play separate roles, but we'll talk to him. His brother mentioned a couple years ago that people around town thought that he was Denzel every once in a while. They look a lot alike.
They do.
They're very close. I wonder if now Denzel could be mistaken for Drew, if indeed he can get the Ramblers to the tournament.
Let's hope.
Win and the whole bit. Yeah, should be fun. We'll talk
to him. I don't know
if you
want to hope for that. That would mean that the Bulls' first-round draft pick, former first-round draft pick, is less known, well-known in Chicago than the Loyola basketball coach.
I was trying to compliment the coach, and now I've insulted his brother. So there's no way out of it, and I'm just going to back off and say that we've got the 5-5 next. How's that? I apologize. You've caught me, and we'll get right to the 5-5. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score.
Bernstein and Rahimi, middays, 9 a.m. to noon on the Score.
The Bears' plan. What are you doing? Their plan is save our phony baloney jobs. Try to not get fired because they know how low their boss's bar is.
When Nagy is now the play caller again, it's pretty clear that there was a disconnect with Mitch Trubisky, and perhaps it was more significant than we know.
Dan Bernstein and Layla Rahimi, 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score, an Odyssey station. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top five sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
After Wilson Contreras was hit for the second game by a Brewers pitcher, his outburst caused a commotion and the bench is cleared briefly. Should the Cubs be miffed or just happy to have base runners? Has Contreras become a target? Will the Cubs retaliate against a team they still have to play 16 times after today?
Should the Cubs be miffed or happy to have a base runner? That's unbelievable. That's unbelievable. Whatever it takes, everybody start diving into some pitches. Look, I said this earlier. It doesn't make a ton of sense to me. You know, Anthony Rizzo gets hit more than anyone because of the way he kind of leans over the base. We saw it the other night with the umpire couldn't even see the ball coming because Anthony is kind of leaning over the base, and you had some jawing from the dugout as a result of that, and the umpire screaming. So I just think that in this COVID world, we're trying to avoid the whole base clearing the dugout clearing element of the game, right? We don't want everybody having a super spreader event because someone is hit by a pitch. So I think that you got to keep an eye on that. I got to tell you, it didn't make sense to me that you would hit Wilson Contreras there. It just didn't, from a baseball standpoint. You're in the ninth inning. I get it. They got a four-run lead. But why would you put anyone on base to open an inning? It just didn't seem to make a ton of sense. He is very touchy. He's just a very emotional guy. And I think if you wanted to upset someone, he would be the guy that you know you can't upset. But I get it. He gets hit a couple times, so now you're wondering, do you have to do something? Are they plotting something? I really honestly didn't think it was as big a deal as it was made out to be. I just didn't think that it was something you needed to retaliate against. Now, maybe I'm wrong about that, and I don't have the unwritten rule book, so I can't go to it right now. It is actually unwritten, but I hope this doesn't become a thing, because as we talked about, I think, was it yesterday or the day before, you see the Brewers a lot here early in the season, and you just don't want to get into some sort of weird beanball war with a team to open the year. Now, I get it. They're up 2-0, and you feel like you got to get one in the back of the net, but I would say let your better humanity step forward and let it go.
I think it was a case more of bad pitching, bad execution, than bad intentions. What we're talking about here is something that you don't want to happen if you're Wilson Contreras. Absolutely not. But Brad Boxberger was on his third pitch. And so he's in a 4-0 game, trying to get going, trying to, you know, he doesn't want to come into the game and on his third pitch create something like that. So when you look at it and you take a step back, as cooler heads prevail, it doesn't make any sense why he would do that, especially after the night earlier that we talked about. Wilson Contreras was hitting the helmet. That was ugly. When Devin Williams hit him the night before, 93 miles per hour, right to the noggin, you do understand why Wilson Contreras would be touchy, would be triggered. It's the sixth time, as I pointed out, in the last 11 games against this same team that he has been hit, which is kind of ridiculous when you think about it. I like what David Ross had to say afterward. I like the fact that he said, you know, you do have to be better than that if you're the pitcher, if you're Boxberger, if you're doing – you're on the mound in a major league game. You've got to be better when you pitch inside. You can't lack the control where you're going to hit guys like this. So you're going to create moments that can be interpreted differently by everybody. It doesn't sound like Craig Counsell, listening to and seeing what he had to say post game in terms of he understood why Contreras reacted the way he did, but he didn't sense that was the case throughout the team. So let's hope the Cubs can move on. They do have to play the Brewers 16 more times. These two teams don't really like each other. I think there's a respect there that's healthy. You don't want it to become an unhealthy matchup either, because that doesn't really benefit anybody. So I hope that they read the unwritten rule book correctly, or maybe ignore it and just move on from this and just chalk it up to more bad pitching than bad intentions.
There's not much north of the Cheddar Curtain that I like. Most things north of the Cheddar Curtain I dislike. And the Brewers are not at the top. It's that team that resides in Green Bay. They are at the top of the things that I don't like up there. But I don't like Craig Counsell. I don't like the Brewers. I think the Brewers have that second-class, third-class citizen thing going on. The whole idea of Wrigley Field North bothers them when Chicagoans, Illinoisans are allowed to cross over to the Cheddar Curtain and fill up Miller Park with Cub fans, and it becomes a home crowd for them. Here's the thing. The pitcher should be better than that if there was no intentions. I think there were intentions. They're up 4-0. Putting him on base that's not putting the tying run. It's not putting the winning run on base by doing that. They like to mess with Wilson because he is, as Mully put it, an edgy guy. Also, let's not forget what happened in the second inning of the game. Javi Baez took one a little high and tight and tried to start something and then calmed down and then waved everybody off. But all these Cubs, and David was right yesterday when he brought it up, but it's sitting there. The idea of Cub players in their final years of deals with the Northside team. And I think everybody's mindset might be on me, instead of team. So when pitches get too close and could potentially ruin their year to shine, their year to prove to the Cubs or somebody else what their value is, I think they are going to be touchy. So I think there were intentions. And here's the thing. If the Cubs are up by 4 or 5 today or down by 4 or 5 today in the 8th or 9th inning, go ahead and send a message back. I'm all for it.
The most pressing question is,
given Michael Kopech's fast start to the season, 1 hit, no runs, and 8 strikeouts in 4 innings, are you coming around to the idea that the bullpen is the perfect place for him? Is it an advantage that in relief he's able to rely on his fastball and slider and doesn't have to establish any other pitches like he would as a starter?
I don't think after 2 games I'm going to change my opinion that Michael Kopech has the potential to be a dominant starting pitcher in the major leagues and for the White Sox. I love the way that he has started this season. He has been unhittable. He has pitched 4 innings. He's given up 1 hit. He doesn't have an earned run against him yet. He's walked 2, struck out 8 in 4 innings. He's been lights out. He's been everything that you would have hoped when you talked about expectations early in the season for Michael Kopech in 2 appearances, but it's only 2 appearances. White Sox are being smart here. You don't want to use him too often. The overuse factor is a concern. But I just think that, yeah, it allows him to limit his repertoire of pitches because he's in a relief mode and the role is different and, you know, certainly the requirements differ. But I like the fact that he has so many pitches to choose from. I like the idea of him being out there every 5th day, the regularity, the familiarity, and I think that's probably what he wants to do. If he were to go to the bullpen, I don't envision him being in a role like this. I think this is what you do. This is a creative solution it's not even a problem, but it's a creative solution for what to do when you have 2 very young, potent pitchers like Garrett Crochet, who we saw again last night, and Michael Kopech. You're making the most of what they have to offer now. But I think what they have to offer later is both guys can be assets, strong assets at the front of your rotation, and that's hard to find. So I think that as good as Michael Kopech has been already, as promising as he looks like he will be this year, I still think long-term he projects to me as a top-of-the-rotation starter, and I'm going to probably feel that way until we see him in that role, or at least try it as a starter, and wait and see how he fares then.
Yeah, you know, I love the way they're using him for the reasons stated in the question. I really think that for a guy that is coming off basically 2 years without pitching, he's in a role where he can have the success he's having. You know, I know that it's just a couple of relief stints, but boy, he's looked fantastic both times we've seen him. And I think it's because he's gaining confidence, and all he has to worry about is throwing a couple of pitches. He doesn't have to worry about establishing anything else. He just comes into the game and uses his overpowering stuff to get out of whatever situation he's in. It's a perfect role for him. I don't argue at all with the idea that eventually both those guys will be starters and guys that you'll rely upon heavily. But given the situation of where he's at in his career, sitting out last season, and then the year before, obviously, recovering from Tommy John surgery, I just think he's in the perfect spot right now for what you want from him, and that is helping out of the bullpen, gaining confidence, improving, getting better, and then eventually we'll worry about the future, we'll worry about how he's supposed to be a starter and what happens. I just love what they're doing with him because, you know, they did that with Chris Sale. We saw him come up and make an immediate impact and then eventually become a starter. I'm pretty sure they did that with Mark Burley, if memory serves.
Yep.
Now, those are lefties, and that might apply more to Crochet, but I think given the circumstances of Michael Kopech's career, this is a perfect way to get him involved and to get him up and running and to take advantage of what he can do without kind of overtaxing him or worrying about all the innings and all the rest of it. It's just I just think that we ought to give a tip of the cap to the White Sox for the way that they're handling these guys in the right now. I don't think that that means the future is a lock in terms of their use in the bullpen. In fact, far from it. I think they both are eventually frontline starters, as you say, David. But in the right now, this is really good.
There's no doubt that the White Sox know more about pitching than I do. I'm not going to sit here and say that I don't. But I think if he was needed, that he would be doing just as well as one of the five starters as he's done so far out of the bullpen. He's been great out of the bullpen. And I think I agree, having him with the major league team is much more effective, not only for himself, but for the White Sox, instead of having him at the taxi squad or somewhere else, stretching him out to be that starter. Hopefully, things will go well enough that the White Sox won't even need to tinker. There won't be the situation where they need him to start this year. And I can be proven wrong. That's fine. You know, here's another question. You know, if he's already pitched four innings, right, or four or five innings so far, pretty early in the. I mean, if he in this role, how many innings is he going to pitch out of this role? I mean, this is good. Listen, the Sox are spoiled for choice. This is a good problem, a good debate to have. He's doing very, very well. Absolutely well. Crochet is going to be very, very good. These are all good, positive things. I just wonder if the Sox need another starter at some point. Is it Crochet? Is he going to be the guy? Is it going to be my guy? Is it going to be somebody else? That will be the question.
Yeah,
but luckily they have that. Luckily they have the stable.
Yeah.
Right. Luckily they have the stable of pitchers.
You raise a good point, though, about usage in terms of once you start the car, don't you have to take it for a lengthy drive? So once you warm Kopech up, he's been going two innings per outing. Don't you? That's almost like you'd like to be that. That's the minimum, right? You don't want to use him for less than that. You don't want to use him for a couple batters here or there. You definitely want to get the most out of him warming up and getting his arm loose. So I wonder what the typical minimum is. I wonder what the typical max would be in terms of usage.
He's too good not to keep in the game. I mean, he's been so good that it's not like you're going to decide, you know what, that one inning's enough. Let him go a couple innings. That's great.
I'm sorry, I have a question for you.
After Nikola Vucevic led the Bulls with 32 points and 17 rebounds, and six guys scored in double figures in their second straight victory over the Pacers, do we think players are feeling more comfortable in their roles? Are the Bulls better against good teams with Vucevic the number one option on offense and Zach LaVine the number two, or does it matter if they're winning?
It's irrelevant if they're winning. I don't think, you know, whoever the leading scorer is really matters, you know, and I think that Zach is clearly coming back from the ankle thing, so I don't hold it too much in it. Vooch has been excellent. He's really good, and I think they're starting to figure out how to play. There was a couple of really good pick-and-roll moments between those two guys in that game, and I think that, look, they have got to win. They got, what is it? This was, last night was the first of five games in seven nights, winnable games. All on the road, but, you know, I get it. Toronto's getting better. You got to figure out a way to beat them. They got games on what is it, Thursday and Friday, and then Sunday and Monday. And I think that these are winnable games that they pretty much need to win here in order to get back into the playoff hunt. So if they can put together, if they can start stacking some wins, I think we're going to feel entirely differently about the Bulls and where they're at and what they're battling for than if they continue to kind of struggle and fail to win. So I love the idea that they put a couple games together. It's in win mode now with Vooch, and I don't really care who's available or who isn't for the opponent. As David said earlier, I think we had agreed not to speak of such things. But I like that idea that they now start stacking some wins and get to a point where we feel like, hey, they're close to 500. Here we go. They're going to get a playoff spot, an actual playoff spot, not the play-in stuff. But either way, I want them to be playing games in the postseason.
I like the fact that there's an actual option besides Zach LaVine. I like the idea that there could be another number one option offensively for the Bulls. And you see why. Because Vooch has been hot. And he's a double-double machine, 32 last night. And Zach LaVine has been hampered by the ankle. You can see that. His last five games, he's averaging 19.4 points a game. That's well under his average. You think it has more to do with the injury than the addition of Vooch. But I do think it's fair to wonder, if you have one option and you need one shot, who's the offense running through? You can use both guys. You can use the pick and roll. You can see the way that the offense functions well when Vooch is moving the ball. He has tremendous vision, and he's such a good passer. He finds the open man, and as dangerous as he is as a scorer, he's just as I think, important as a facilitator, which is why I think the offense always is running through him, but the ball in Zach LaVine's hands is a good idea too. What I liked last night is that you did see balance. You saw six guys in double figures. You saw Markkanen being a little bit more aggressive. The Bulls use a big lineup at times. This is kind of fun to consider what they're capable of once they start to feel comfortable playing with each other. Didn't have a lot of practice time. This is a team that isn't going to overwhelm anybody. They're still 10th in the East, so let's not get carried away. But two consecutive victories against whoever the opponent is, and however shorthanded they might be, two wins for this Bulls team in a row is nothing to diminish because of where they were and how that much they have struggled. So I like the fact that Vooch makes them more, helps their offense function at a higher level. Defensively, I still have questions about this team, but whether it's Zach, whether it's Vooch, whether you decide which guy you want to go through first, hey, if it's working, it really doesn't matter. And if you're winning, nobody will care.
Right. If you win, nobody will care. What the Bulls did last night is they took care of business. They had that was a game that if Mully were talking about a postseason for the Bulls, that was a game that you got to win. And the Raptors are banged up too, and that's going to be a game on Thursday night that you need to win. And the other thing that was great to see is I do think that, Hawes going Vooch. I'm going to go Nikola. You know, that's where I'm going with that guy. We'll have some fun with his. We'll have some fun with his name, right? Like he looked comfortable. I think that's the most comfortable I've seen him look so far as a Bull. And it does take some time. It's not just roll the ball out and let the players and do their thing. He's working into a system. Him and Zach are getting comfortable with each other. He's learning new teammates. Billy's learning new plays to call for him, so that this will continue to develop in a positive direction. Best news about last night was you needed to go out there, you needed to get guys feeling good about themselves, and that's the case. Six guys in double figures. Now, the problem, again, though, with Markkanen, I'm just going to keep pounding it because it's sitting there. David brought him up. I wasn't going to say anything, but David brought him up. But he couldn't finish. He got kicked in the leg, and he couldn't finish the game. Okay, you don't pay guys hundreds of millions of dollars who can't get kicked in a leg against a Pacers team and have to sit on the bench. So, I just have to pile on I want him.
He
gone.
Was more aggressive when he was on the floor, though. He was. You have to give him a little bit of credit there. He did try to find his way better in a more aggressive way than he had previously, right? No?
Golf clap.
Yeah, so actually, Layla, it's a good question.
Now that the Cubs plan to build a statue of Ferguson Jenkins outside Wrigley Field alongside Ernie, Billy, Harry, and Ron, who will be the next Cubs legend to be cast in metal? Are statues still the ultimate honor, or have they become too common?
There's a lot of them popping up around Chicago sports. There's a lot of statues going out there. I don't know if they're too common. It's still a pretty cool thing. I did not expect this to be coming. Maybe I just haven't been paying attention. This seemed to be kind of an understanding that this was going to happen. Fergie referenced it. Good for Fergie Jenkins. He's a really nice guy. We have all talked with him over the years. So I think that the fact that he was so happy about the news is encouraging and fun, and you like to see that happen. As for the next one, would it matter? Would it help contract negotiations with Anthony Rizzo if they kind of show him what he would look like cast in bronze? I don't know. Would that make him think about being a Cub for life and not have to sound so kind of ticked off that things have fallen apart? Realistically, though, the next statue outside Wrigley Field is going to be Joe Maddon hoisting a glass of wine and put somewhere between Harry and Billy and Ernie and now Fergie. Who knows where, but I think it'll be Joe Maddon.
This is like a clear Dustin favorite. He's always been the anti-statue guy. I don't know. I think it's unfair to guys like Hack Wilson that they're not getting statues. I know. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that Marquee put a statue of Ryne Sandberg out in the bleachers at one point. I don't know if that stays there or not. I got to see. I need Frank Chance to have one. I think Mordecai Brown. I mean, I think you really need to dip
Mordecai.
Into.
Mordecai Brown.
You got to go back to.
That's one if you start to run out of bronze and you're like, okay, well, you need Three Finger Brown.
Well, that was his statue. Are we ever going to see Sammy? Are we ever going to see a Sammy statue?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
How about just like in the place where the noodle was, just put a giant boombox.
The noodle.
With maybe, how about this, maybe Woody like smashing the boombox, something like that. I think the real problem is going to come when you try to figure out, I mean, they're honoring a lot of guys that didn't win the World Series. What are you going to do with all the people that did win a World Series? And I think that's a dilemma for them. I don't know how you determine whether, what they should do is like a huddle of all the players and you'd have everybody in it, and you'd have
team photo
in the middle. You'd have Jay Hay in the middle, like whispering wisdom.
And it should be like in a weight room. Like, I should have like a weight bench also kind of there, sitting on a weight room, just to simulate kind of like the reenactment
perfect.
Of the 2016. Yeah, perfect.
That's what you got to – that is the way you got to think of these things. That way you get more guys in, and then you don't have to deal with any controversy, like why is Addison Russell included? It's easy.
Yes, I think the Hall of Fame has gotten too wide open, and now we're getting a little nutty with all the statues. Don't get me wrong. Fergie Jenkins, very nice man. Very, very good pitcher. Very good pitcher. Didn't win a World Series, as you pointed out, Mully. That team didn't win a World Series. Thank you. But it's a great point. Who from that World Series team are you going to honor? And, what about Theo, right? I mean, what about John Lester? If John Lester was the key to getting it all going in the right direction. Jake Arrieta had an unbelievable two-year run to kind of put, so there's so many guys. Do you take that picture where they're all huddled in front of the mound out in Cleveland, and it's all of them, and it's like a something like this? If you're watching us on Twitch, it's a group picture. But in all seriousness, with Gallagher Way and inside Wrigley Field, I mean, you could build.
Yeah, you could have your own.
Kind of move them around. You put them on rollers and you move them around. If you're celebrating a team or a weekend or an era, you just move them in and out. You move them in and out.
Where?
And you put them in the Cubs
store. I'm not
they
even
got that
joking
trophy
about
room.
This. Well, that, I mean, you put the museum up like you did, like the Packers have up in Green Bay. But
yeah.
Is it? Right. I mean, if Ernie Banks is Mr. Cup, Where does Ryan Sandberg fit in? I'm not joking.
It's a good question.
He's got to be right there. I think he might be better than anybody else.
We jumped Rhino. We did. When we talk Anthony Rizzo as the new Mr. Cub, I think we did jump Rhino a little bit. I have to agree with that. Not that Anthony's not been great, but I think Rhino kind of got jumped.
I think you're right. I think that's fair. But Dustin, very good. Very good. Fergie Jenkins won 20 or more games 6 seasons in a row for the Cubs. Is that not more than very good?
But last night they also mentioned his overall record.
Overall record.
280-ish wins with
284, 226. 280-ish
wins with 200. Yeah, okay, 60 games over 500.
Well, I mean, how do you handle Greg Maddux? Isn't he maybe the best pitcher the Cubs have ever had?
He left.
Okay.
Brave. Well, he's a brave.
They let him go.
I mean, so did Fergie, right? Fergie left too.
Yeah.
Molly, there's a ton to that question.
We know new Oklahoma coach Porter Moser turned down a chance to go to St. John's and found out yesterday he could have gone to UNLV. If you personally had a chance to make big money in New York, Las Vegas, or Norman, Oklahoma, where would you choose to work?
I just can't wait to hear what Dustin says about working in Vegas, because I believe he briefly did, and I wonder if that would be a good spot for you, Dustino. Okay, first of all, among those choices, I'd stay in Chicago. Okay, let's just get that out of the way. That's not an option in this question, but I think among those choices, I would stay in Chicago. And it's just family, connections. I just don't see myself being interested. But I would honestly say, if I'm choosing between those places, I think it has to be New York. I think that New York would be the closest I could find to kind of living in Chicago. I think there's great energy in New York, and I think that that if you had a chance to live in New York, you probably need to take it. Now, it could drive you crazy. I mean, a lot of people don't like the downtown lifestyle or the city lifestyle or being surrounded by people. And if that's the case for you, then Norman, Oklahoma is the spot. But I think that for me, I would probably say it's New York followed by Vegas, followed by Norman.
Yeah, if that's the question, if it would be places to visit, it'd be easy. It'd be Vegas and then New York and then Norman, but that's not the question. The question is places to live. You're a coach. You get into college coaching. You understand certain things. You're going to live in college towns. And if you want to live in the big city because that is who you are, don't get into coaching because that's not going to be what you're ideally suited for. You're going to go to places like Bloomington, Illinois, like Arkansas, like Little Rock, Arkansas, like College Station, Texas, like St. Louis. Those are all places where Porter Moser spent considerable time during his career before coming back to Chicago, his hometown, where he spent a great decade building Loyola into the kind of program that made him an attractive coach to coach in the Big 12. Norman, Oklahoma is a great college town if you are the basketball coach of the university there. So I think that the quality of life issue, will he miss Chicago? Absolutely. He's from here. You're going to miss your hometown. But it doesn't reflect poorly on Norman, Oklahoma, because you miss certain things about Chicago or wherever you're from if it's a bigger city. There's a lot to like about college towns if you are a college coach or if you're a fan of college sports or you like that atmosphere. I would pick Norman, Oklahoma 10 out of 10 times, but I'm a college sports guy. So I would love to be in that environment. Those are the kinds of things that if you love college sports, you want to gravitate towards. So I would pick Norman, Oklahoma, or any major college town like that because of the excitement level when things are going really good.
I've only really lived here, and I know some people that lived in Chicago or have lived in Chicago in the past would even say you're not from Chicago. I've lived in Elmhurst literally every year of my life except for like two, most of the year. So I don't know. I visited plenty of places. I've never been to Norman, Oklahoma. I would like to go there. I do like a college town. I think it's fun. I think there's a lot to be said about that. And when you make the kind of money these coaches makes, you can visit any place you want. New York. I wouldn't want to live in New York. I think visiting New York would be great. New York puts me on tilt. It's too busy. There's too much going on. I do love Las Vegas. I almost moved to Las Vegas. I worked in Las Vegas for many weeks at a time when my wife was pregnant with our oldest child. We almost sold the house and moved to Vegas. Thank goodness we didn't. But yes, we almost did. I have an aunt that lives there. I like to go there. I always try to get Mitch to send us there whenever it's humanly possible and makes sense. So yes, Vegas would be, it would be hard, but I think it would be interesting to live in a college town. I wouldn't say I wouldn't do it, but if it was just based on not knowing anything, I'd pick Vegas. Vegas, it would be Vegas for me. But Chicago's world-class. This is a world-class city, and that's probably why I haven't had the guts to ever pick up and move.
Yeah, it's a great town. I could see myself in New York. I don't think I could handle Vegas. I think that would be the one that would not that just wouldn't work for me.
I've been to Vegas with you, Mully, and I would love to follow you around in Vegas.
Oh boy, it's not a pretty scene. The problem with Mully is not that he goes out too late; it's that he never comes home. That gets a little bit exhausting after a few days. All right,
Hotel Cortez, is that it? Cortez Hotel, which one was that?
Oh my God! Yeah, I went to El Cortez at whatever hour. I had to use all the blackjack 50-cent pieces that I was saving for the kids to get the cab ride home. You don't want to know. All right, jeez. 312-644-6767. What do you think? Is Wilson Contreras right? Are you with Dustin? You want to start a beanball war? You like the way they're using Kopech? You like the Sox on a winning streak? What do you think of Vooch in the Bulls? Is it starting to happen? Do you feel a turning here of the tide? We're talking statues. Who is the Cub that most deserves a statue? And why is there a delay on that one? And where would you want to live outside Chicago? It's crazy when you think about it. I get it. You know, I understand if you're a college guy, you want that joy. There's 100,000 people in Norman. I don't know that there's enough people to cry. I don't know if I could ever calm down because I need a crowd. I just need, you know, where's the 24-hour restaurant? Where is the nightlife? How does one continue to live if you don't hear glass breaking and sirens going, etc.?
They have electricity there.
But they don't have that Mars light from the police car, okay, kind of, you know, coming through the blinds in the middle of the night.
Norman, Oklahoma, you're making it sound like it's some like deserted place in the middle of like these old Dust Bowl Oklahoma caricatures. Yeah,
Norman, like
Oklahoma's pretty good college town.
Yeah, never been there. Again, maybe we do a show road trip, but I'd rather go to Vegas. It's Mully and Haas, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score.
You're listening to the number one sports morning show in Chicago, Mully and Hall. But now you can watch the show live on Twitch. Just search 670 The Score on twitch.tv or on the Twitch app. Check it out now.
Twitch is fun.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!